Coming up in This Week in Computer Hardware, so much Computex. The Core i7-8086K is official. Intel demos a chip with 28 cores running at 5 gigahertz, but their new low-power display technology is what we really want. AMD shows off 32 cores in the next Threadripper. Qualcomm Snapdragon 850 is about Windows laptops, and Asus put OLED screens on CPU coolers and a power supply. All that and more, much more, coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 469, recorded June 7th, 2018. OLED CPU coolers rule.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engaging, most delightful, and occasionally even the most affordable news in PC hardware. We love the mobile, we love the consoles, we love the handhelds, we love VR. Mostly, I think Ryan loves not being in Computex, but still getting all of the news from Computex in Taiwan. Sir.
You know, yes, I enjoy not traveling there. I enjoy not having the jet lag. I enjoy... you know, not just feeling awful, waking up at the wrong time of day. I do. I enjoy the people there. I love the food there. But yeah, the convenience of sitting at home. Now, it does require some sacrifice because I have to stay up to like 2 a.m., you know, to cover the events that like the live streams that are happening. Mm-hmm. So I could sit outside of my deck with a drink and stuff and making the real sacrifices necessary to get the news everybody wants.
Man, those Mai Tais are tough at 2 in the morning, I'll tell you. Or do you drink White Russians? I'm trying to think of like, what's the most ridiculous? A grasshopper. Enjoying a grasshopper. A mint julep. You are in Kentucky. It's Taiwan, wonderful. Computex, wonderful. The people at Computex, wonderful. The people in Taiwan, wonderful. The travel and being inverted in your schedule, not your favorite thing. I think we've mentioned this. It's certainly been all over the news in the last couple of weeks. The 40th anniversary 8086, which would be the Core i7-8086K, K for overclockable, is official. 6 cores, 5 gigahertz, Coffee Lake 14 nanometer plus process. You know, It's a lot like an 8700K, but just a smidge faster. I mean, it's four. It feels like I feel a bin sorting operation going on here because it's 4 gigahertz up from the 3.7 gigahertz base clock on the 8700K, 5 gigahertz turbo clock up from the 4.7 gigahertz turbo clock on the 8700K, 12 megabytes of cache, DDR4-2666, 16 PCI lanes, 95 watts, LGA 1150. You know, whatever socket. What we don't know at this point is that what the price is going to be. Personally, I think Intel should give them out for, you know, actually not, you know, 8086 prices because they were kind of terrifying for what you got looking at them in hindsight. But it was an 8086 extraordinary processor when it came out. Do you think it's going to be more than the $349 for the A700K or less? I would assume more.
Oh, no. I think it has to be more. It's a limited edition. 50,000 of them are going to be made. They're going to give away 8,086 of them for a sweepstakes, which I think... And actually, you need to pay attention to this because it starts in 4 hours, the sweepstakes does, as we're recording this, and you only have 24 hours to enter. So if you're listening to this and it's not live, you should absolutely be going to, I think it's game.intel.com/8086sweepstakes. And there you can enter a chance to win. I don't know how much it's going to cost. They list in the... in the terms and conditions that the value is approximately... $425. So my guess is that the retail price on this would be $425. but because it's limited edition, you don't know what the resellers are going to do. You don't know how much they might jack up the price. Right. But, you know, it's 300 megahertz on your base clock, 300 megahertz on your boost clock. It's not a huge number. Chances are, if you try real hard, you could get that overclock yourself. But it's a 5 gigahertz mark. It's just kind of like the cachet of having they sold a processor that that could hit 5 gigahertz on it, which is pretty neat.
You're excited. I can feel it in your voice.
It is like I, you know, having all the rumors of this coming out and then eventually confirming it, our original goal was like, okay, we're rebuilding our GPU testbed. That would be the perfect processor to use for that because it's the fastest single threaded part you can get. However, because of its limited edition nature and not knowing if we'll be able to get replacements if something goes wrong and or, you know, the average consumer may not be able to build a system to duplicate our results, we decided to maybe go back to the 8700K instead. So, we'll see that. So that was one of their announcements. But the other thing that they went into, speaking of 5 gigahertz, was a 28-core processor demo running at 5 gigahertz. Surely you heard some rumblings of this, I assume.
I heard rumblings.
So this is an interesting two-part story. Part one, Intel goes on stage, talks about mini-core processors that they were going to release for the enthusiasts, these high-end enthusiast mega tasker audience. And then they brought out a 28-core part, their current top-of-the-line Core X series part is the 18-core i9-7980XE. And so under that context, they show this demo of a 28-core processor running at 5 gigahertz on all cores, keeping in mind that the part we literally just talked about was 5 gigahertz on one core. It's peak turbo speed. And its base clock was, 4.3, right? So 4.3 on six cores. So now they're talking about 5 gigahertz on 28 cores. It obviously was a screamer for performance. They ran one benchmark. They showed Cinebench with a score of like 7,300 or something like that, which is about 2.2x faster than anything else we'd ever seen on a stock part, that Intel 18-core processor. So the initial impressions were like, wow, this is exciting. And then the internet did the thing that the internet does, and it started to dissect things. It started to look at the cooling solution. It realized it was confirmed that this was running on a water chiller, like a $1,000, $1,500 water chiller that was keeping the coolant at, 4 degrees Celsius, essentially. This is a single processor design, single die design, but it's a different socket. It actually uses the Xeon Scalable socket rather than the X299 socket. I think it's LGA 3647, if I remember correctly. The motherboard had a 32-phase power system. It suddenly became understood that this wasn't your typical consumer configuration that was running this.
Right. Well, this reminds me of some of the stuff Intel used to do back in the day when they had a lot of competition. And I remember they did an overclocking demo at an Intel Developer Day 1,000 years ago. And I looked at one of the guys and I'm like, come on, you ran that with liquid nitrogen to get it to clock that high. And he's like, I can neither confirm nor deny that. But if you look at my right hand, you'll notice that there are two nails missing that may or may not have been frozen off while we were setting this up. You did a nice follow up on this. Motherboards built by Asus and Gigabyte. They were modified server class, LGA 3647 boards. A 1 horsepower water chiller. That's moving a lot of water. Having operated, I think of a 1 horsepower pump, and I think of a self-priming pump that's about, 18 inches high and about 15 inches wide and about a foot deep and has a hose inlet about 3 inches wide. You said it's basically a Xeon Scalable Platinum 8180 that has a list price of $10,000. So this is it feels like Intel's trying to get some of the sizzle back from AMD. And I want to bring something up because I know you're going to have stuff to say here, but that 86K. It's awesome. I'm glad they're giving parts away. I can't get that page to load right now, possibly because so many people are furiously hitting refresh. But an AMD Ryzen 7 2700X with a Wraith Prism LED cooler, which is running at a mere 4.3 gigahertz on max boost, but is an 8-core 16-thread processor, currently sells for $320. I just want to lay that out there when we're looking at the, you know, $425, $450, possibly more because it's collectible, even though it doesn't come with a, you know, latex figurine or a special, you know, fur-covered box or something. But, you know, this is you know, I get why they would do this crazy 28-core, 5, you know, gigahertz demo. And it's cool, except that it's essentially a $10,000 server part that is, I feel comfortable in saying, highly unlikely to meander its way down to the desktop. Am I being harsh on Intel?
No. So here's how I would imagine it being. I could see them releasing this part for the consumer. It's not going to be $10,000. It might be $2,000. Right. It might lack AVX 512. It might, you know, decrease the memory channel count. It might reduce some of the other, you know, ECC memory support to prevent people who need those features from buying the cheap parts rather than the expensive parts. Now, that being said, it's going to be a $2,000 processor that's going to have a $600 motherboard that's going to, you know, be hard to find or whatever you have. You know, Asus and Gigabyte developed these specific boards for it. Will you be able to hit 5 gigahertz on it? No, you will not be able to hit 5 gigahertz on it. Maybe 4 gigahertz becomes the target instead, right? It's still going to be a really powerful part. The positive way to look at this demo in this situation is this was a technology demo. They're talking about what their capabilities are with their process tech, their architecture designs, et cetera. It's not a consumer demo in that this is a part you're going to be able to buy. Now, they didn't like give it a part number. They didn't give you a release date or pricing or anything like that. This was 28 cores running at 5 gigahertz. That's how the demo was presented. But the assumption was, the initial assumption was, oh my God, this is amazing. I can't wait to get a hold of that. And really, the takeaway now is like, okay. Now it's going to be a more interesting battle because clearly Intel is invested in this with AMD putting pressure on them with Threadripper, for example. Yeah,
it's if you dig around on Amazon, by the way, you can actually find 1-horsepower chillers. I just found a link for one, the Eco Plus commercial grade water chiller. You know, these are designed for hydroponics aquariums. You know, this one features a titanium heat exchanger for quote optimum performance and corrosion resistance. You know, so that's actually much more reasonable than I would have thought. Doesn't, you know, it doesn't have particularly great reviews, but you know, it's $1,100, which if you're particularly unhinged in your you know, liquid cooling systems, is not that far out of reach. A more typical price might be, you know, a single phase water chiller. And I want to say like something you might use for a TIG welder or something. You're looking at $1,500 worth of cooling for your $2,000 $600 motherboard. But, you know, and it's also, by the way, in a box as big or bigger than your PC case. Yep. But it's exciting. Jeremy's got the write-up. Intel's displays run on one what? So, you know, for years, Intel said battery life on laptops was really the screen was the problem. And then suddenly they released a new mobile part and chipsets that reduced power consumption by 30 or 40% just by manipulating the processor and the chipset and how it handled things. Mm-hmm. And now they're back to reducing the power consumption on displays, but this is low power display technology. If it's run by Intel graphics, they say they can reduce the power consumed by your screen by 50%. And the demo was a Dell XPS 13 and the battery life was extended to 24 hours with quotes, other models capable of reaching 28 hours. Mm. That to me sounds fascinating. I wonder what it looks like up close.
Yeah. I mean, you have to question if this changes the visual quality of the display. My assertion would be that Intel's smart enough to know that they couldn't get away with that. That we're probably looking at a combination of things like panel self-refresh, variable refresh, and then maybe some technological changes with, I think they mentioned Sharp and one other company as providers of these panels.
Right.
And reducing, I mean, the idea of reducing a panel power draw from 2 watts to 1 watt doesn't sound very compelling until you realize that unlike your processor, the screen never goes idle, right? Like if you're using it, even if you're just staring at it reading, your processor can go idle and use very, very little power. The display is always using that 2 watts. So if you reduce that by half, you know, their math comes up with about a 20% increase going from 20 to 24 hours on this Dell machine that they implemented the technology on. And that, I'm extremely interested in that. If they can convince me that it's not adversely affecting, you know, gaming experiences or what have you, or just reading and scrolling, right? It's suddenly not a blurry mess because of it, then I'm cool with that. And what I find interesting about this, you know, Computex is a very consumer kind of component driven show. It's very different than CES or, you know, any of the AI or, you know, machine learning shows that we often see news come from. Mm-hmm. Intel wants to show people with threats coming in from AMD and threats coming in from Qualcomm on different angles that they still have an important place in this ecosystem. They can do some things that other people can't do. Either they don't have the budget to do it, they don't have the influence to do it, they can't force partners to do things. Whereas Intel can do that, right? They can say, hey, Sharp and this guy and Dell, we've come up with this, we want you to integrate it and go. And they have the mind share to be able to make that happen. And that's, I think that's as much of what this display discussion was at Computex as to the point of even like, you know, how much battery life do you actually get from it? And Intel's still saying, look, we're the leader here. We can do stuff you can't.
I wait with bated breath. I want to see what it looks like. I want to see it implemented. Fair. I want it to show up in the next generation of Dell XPS 13s. I would like to see what conditions does it run under? You know, does it only work when the display is relatively static? I'm with you. I want to see Intel taking names and kicking ass. I'm also excited to see AMD taking names and kicking ass. This is crazy. AMD previewed a 32-core Threadripper CPU for Q3. Will this be subject to some of the limitations of the current? I assume it will be subject to some of the limitations of the current Threadripper architecture.
Meaning what? What limitations are you referring to?
I seem to remember benchmarking issues with some of the applications because of the way it handled
None of that's really going to change. This is basically what they're going to do here for their Zen Plus, you know, Threadripper 2000 series. They're going to go up to 32 core, 64 threads, which basically means, if you remember, the Threadripper has 4 die on it, 2 of which were dead or dummies, and only 2 enabled, 2 8-core Zeppelin dies from AMD. Now they're basically going to put good dies on all 4 of them, and you know they're going to offer a 24 core as well, so there'll be a configuration where 3 of the dies are working, I assume. Any kind of like software eccentricities will still exist probably, unless AMD is doing a lot of work with Microsoft to adjust things in schedulers. Unless, you know, one of the interesting things is Zen Plus that we saw in the Ryzen 2000 series does purport to have some fairly significant, and we measured some of this as well, decreases in like core-to-core latencies, memory latencies, cache latencies, these things that were part of that problem that you were referring to. And those fixes and advantages may end up being more useful on these super high core count parts than on the 8-core count parts or the 6-core count parts, where, you know, Microsoft could theoretically schedule these threads across any die at any point and all that, right? And so anytime you can reduce those latencies, that's going to be, it's going to be an improvement. The other thing I took away from this is AMD did their press conference the day after Intel did, and they didn't release benchmark scores. They didn't do anything like that. They showed it in comparison to an Intel 18-core part, talked about their advantages there, but they did mention very specifically like, hey, we're running this on air-cooled configuration. We don't need complex phase change or water chillers to make this demo work, right? And it was a very clear reference to what had happened the day before, and that's what they, you know, that's what they should have done. That makes the most sense. Q3, so you're thinking July, August timeframe, likely for something for this to come out. Intel's demo was by the end of 2018, and now you don't really know what it's going to look like. because of the complication around that 5 gigahertz demo. The AMD one was more of a, here's what you're going to get. We're doubling core count again. You're going to be able to get it, you know, this year. I don't know what to think about the pricing at this point, because the 16 core part still sells for, I think like $900 or $750 or like that, right? $959, right? So the Threadripper 1950X, the 16 core part is just under $1,000. So unless we start to see some price, now that we know 32 core is coming, if you're a crazy person that wants all these cores and threads, you're probably like, I'm going to wait, right? I'm not going to buy the 16 core Threadripper or even an 18 core Intel X series part. I'm going to wait. Mm-hmm. And is this going to be a $2,000 part? Is AMD going upwards? I think it would be almost impossible to think that they would be able to sell there's 32 core part for $1,000, right? That they would somehow match that maximum price point. I would love it. I don't know if they'll have the guts to do it though. So, well, I think we'll find out sooner than maybe most might have predicted.
Finding out sooner is always nice.
Yeah.
In other news at AMD, or in other news at Computex, AMD shows off 7-nanometer Vega graphics, which has really got to be emotionally traumatizing at Intel. You know, Tim's got the write-up, AMD Radeon Instinct RX Vega graphics product. It's AMD's first 7-nanometer GPU, RX Vega GPU with 32 gigabytes of HBM2 memory. Man, you know, this is pretty cool. They get a demo with a ray tracing with, quote, realistic reflections and shadows being rendered on a per-pixel basis in a model, which is not going to show up in gaming anytime in the immediate or foreseeable future. What do you think of the whole 32 gigabytes of HBM2?
I think it's impressive because of the capacity and also that it's a four-stack implementation of HBM2, which AMD had not shown yet. They had only been able to show the capability to go up to 32 gigs. Some of the NVIDIA parts have gone up to 32 gigs. This is not a consumer targeted part. It's under the Instinct brand. It's meant to be a machine learning, AI, deep learning part. I know there was some excitement post the event. There were some headlines and some other websites that maybe didn't quite catch the specifics on it. But the 7-nanometer Vega, I would be very surprised if this ever comes out as a consumer part. It may, mm-hmm. but the stuff that they were demoing, especially the 32 gigs of HBM2, is not going to come out in a consumer variant that way. And the additional architectural improvements they've made to this chip that include deep learning operations, virtualization mm-hmm. improvements, things like that, those are obviously targeted towards enterprise applications, not consumer applications. I kind of look at this more as a testing platform for AMD mm-hmm. to really figure out 7-nanometer architectures with its GPUs that it can then apply to the next consumer part, the Navi part, and utilize it that way. I don't expect us to see a gaming part from it, but AMD would definitely like to get involved in the highly profitable, very exciting and very attention-grabbing machine learning spaces with some of its products.
Oh my goodness. I'm still stuck on the low power display technology. I want 24 hours of battery life. That's all I'm going to say.
Agreed.
Oh man. We should take a moment to thank our sponsor. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience. If you've applied for a mortgage ever, it's traumatizing. To apply for a mortgage these days and feel all 19th century about it is particularly awful, which is why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Because mortgages should be simpler. They should be less painful. They should be client-focused. They should be about making your life easier and using technology to do it. Rocket Mortgage, they're trying to give you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. So they make things simple. They make it easy to understand the details. You know, you don't want to sign for, you know, a 30-year mortgage and feel, you want to feel yes. You want to be excited. You want to be confident that you've got the right mortgage for you. Rocket Mortgage, they make it convenient. They're trusted partners. They allow you to share your financial information at the touch of a button. They give you that control, and it's powerful. It doesn't matter if it's your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage can perform thousands of calculations in seconds and let you know what that loan really means for you. Based on your income, your assets, your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify. And again, help you find the right loan for you, the one that's just right. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twit. That's rocketmortgage.com/twit. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And again, over here at Twitch, we want to thank rocketmortgage.com/TWIT for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Man. NVIDIA is casting its casting its net in another area. GPUs, set-top boxes, you know, self-driving cars, and now the Isaac development platform for AI-powered robotics.
Hey, why not, right?
I was like, there was just silence, and I was like, ugh.
No, yeah, so here's what's interesting to me about this is I actually believe that the market for robotics, and this is everything from delivery systems to drones to automation of factories to robotics to, you know, hospitals, all that type of stuff is all going to be based on these types of development platforms, right? If we look at the deep learning, machine learning stuff that they're doing now, they're all data center based, huge racks of devices. That's what's giving us the ability to train these types of networks and to train these AI systems. But they're all going to be implemented at some edge device, right? And I believe that market will eventually be bigger than what we have today for machine learning in the data center. And that's really what the NVIDIA Jetson family of products has kind of represented. It is their, I don't want to say like DIY hackathon type board, but in some ways it's that. It is a $1,200 product as opposed to the $400,000 server that NVIDIA sells. It's a $1,200 product that is a ARM CPU plus NVIDIA GeForce GPU plus, you know, different controllers and systems involved that can handle, you know, vision processing and camera inputs and all that type of stuff. It's a $9 billion. The new one that they announced just before Computex is the Isaac system that uses the Jetson Xavier platform, which is 9 billion transistors, 512 Volta CUDA cores, 8 ARM cores, 8 ARM V8 cores. It's got, let's see, actually the specs here, it can handle up to 16 camera inputs, GPIO, it does 4K 60 output, PCIe 4, 10 gigabit per second USB 3.1, gigabit Ethernet, all these different connections, all these things that I don't really know what they are, UART, SD, I2S, I2C, I know those are SPI, CAN. These are all like interfaces that you see in automotive and industrial applications. Right. And this is the kind of platform that if you're at a college and you're entering into a robotics competition, This is your basis for that. And I find it, I don't know enough about it yet to be really, really excited, but I like the idea that we're getting more compute horsepower into those people's hands. So I can finally get the, what was the Jetsons maid robot name? I need one of those to keep cleaning up after the dogs that we have. So I don't think that was one of the direct applications NVIDIA mentioned, but I'd like to see it.
Well, we're talking about processors for unusual applications. Snapdragon 850 mobile compute platform. Qualcomm's first dedicated for PCs. So basically it's a step away from, you know, sort of the 845. Well, you know, it's a different number, right? This is really their first Snapdragon CPU that's dedicated for the Windows platform. I've been hearing some noise from PC vendors behind the scenes where they are excited about their ARM, Windows, laptops coming later this year, but these are going to be expensive. I mean, what's the big change here? I mean, you know, better LTE performance, better battery life. You know, it's essentially the SD845 system on a chip, the basic core, as a Snapdragon 845, Cryo 385 CPU, Adreno 630 graphics. You know, we could get into sort of the Hexagon 685 DSP vector processor. You know, Snapdragon modems. Is this primarily a naming difference, or are there a lot of things going on in terms of customization for a laptop or a Windows platform?
So it's a little bit of both. It's definitely a renaming thing. The 845 and the 850 share the same, you know, CPU architecture, GPU architecture, DSP, all of that is shared in there. The modem is the same. This is slightly higher TDP, slightly higher clock speed, right? So you can think of it as kind of like an overclocked 845 if you want. And so that's not a whole lot of difference, but they wanted to be able to separate the two so that we didn't have to say, yeah, but this uses an overclocked 845. Now we can just say it uses an 850. And it starts them down the pathway of being able to create separation between the chips they build for their smartphone, the chips they build for your mobile PC, and the chips you build for your VR headsets. They're all going to be kind of differentiated in some, and as we progress, the roadmaps look like we'll see more differences between them as you go. So it makes sense that the phone, that the chip in your laptop should be able to scale to higher frequencies, should be able to burst into higher speeds in order to handle the Windows environment as opposed to the Android or iOS environment. Also, just so that's kind of where they're diving down.
You have so much space for cooling inside of a laptop compared to a phone. I think that's kind of the first obvious moment I have there. They're also talking about, like I said, like 20% greater gigabit LTE speeds, more battery life, 30% jump performance. I'm curious. I'm also curious to see if this is another one of those things where we see one generation of a product and then it just kind of goes away. He looks around for Ryan's smartwatch.
Well, I have a Apple Watch now, so you know, I don't think so, right? Because fundamentally, they're all going to be based on whatever the smartphone chip is, because that's where the mass audience is. They're not going to start a completely new designs on this, but they may, you know. So, for example, on the XR headset, the XR1 chip that they announced last week as well, which is targeted to AR, VR, they could remove the LTE modem. They could remove some other components that make the chip a little bit easier to cool, make it a little bit smaller and cheaper to manufacture. But they're not going to fundamentally change the architectures for these adjacent markets that are still pretty small, right? And that's the thing you have to get past. If this suddenly becomes a, you know, 10 million chip market for them as opposed to a, you know, 1 million chip market, then maybe they make different decisions. But for now, I think we're still going to see derivatives of whatever the smartphone chip is, but those derivatives will expand away from that center the longer we're around.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm very curious to see how the ARM-based Windows laptops are received. I'm also was kind of fascinated. Asus has a whole bunch of products, especially in some new areas, the Ryujin and Ryuo water coolers. Did not expect that.
Yeah, me neither. I wouldn't normally put kind of a new player into the cooler space news into the rundown. It is Asus, so they're a huge name in this. They announce, they make pretty much or sell pretty much everything at this point. What is maybe the most interesting is you see that Asus logo on that show that picture again. That Asus logo on that's an OLED screen.
Really?
Yeah, and you can put whatever you want on there apparently. And if you look at the cooler above it, the ROG logo is also an OLED screen on that one.
So, I can feel that I'm torn between being delighted and wondering sort of what the resolution on the graph. I can think of some friends of mine that are building particularly fancy machines right now that will be delighted to, you know, Shannon, for one, is looking for the full ground effects package for her next gaming PC build. She wants everything. She wants the motherboard, the memory, the liquid cooler, the case itself, you know, the rest of her room, her speakers, everything to be full RGB LED enhanced. And now she could possibly wedge a picture of Sailor Moon inside of her case, running on the OLED screen on the liquid cooler. I can only imagine the cost.
I don't have that part of the, I don't have that answer yet. That's for certain. It's just one of those things. Like, is this going to be the next RGB? I mean, of course this has RGBs as well. Let's not get crazy here. Yeah. But, for the people that want to customize this stuff, I think that's pretty cool. You are no doubt going to have to pay for it. It's not going to be a free add-in drop-in feature by any stretch. But yeah. And actually, if you look at the, look at the next story at the power supply, you may in fact find that this power supply has an OLED screen that displays the current power consumption as well. That 1200 watts there is not a sticker.
There you have it.
So what do you think? You're going ROG on the next build now, right?
I don't think I can afford to go all ROG on the next build now. because I'm just not seeing myself needing a 400 or 500 watt power supply and buying a 1200 watt power supply so I can watch the wattage on the OLED screen on the side of, you know, who knows? Maybe I'll get one of those fancy tempered glass cases on all sides and I'll suddenly feel a compelling need to take my kids off of health insurance and buy a spectacular. I mean, it's go, you know, if you're going to spend the money, you may as well have it shiny. I want to see the benchmarks on it first. I mean, I'm sure it's Asus. I'm sure they're going to do a good job on it, but not a lot of people actually need 1200 watt power supplies. I feel confident in saying most of the people I've seen with 1000 watt power supplies are, you know, wasting somewhere between 400 and 600 watts of that power supply in their incredibly beautiful system. But
yeah,
it's always nice to have more options. Something I thought was perhaps a little more compelling and also slightly insane because Asus is figuring out where to put displays on everything. The ZenBook Pro 15 UX 580. Jeremy's got a nice write-up on it. 83% screen to body ratio with their new screen pad and nano edge bezels. They got a 4K alternative if you want more awesome than 1080p can provide, which is interesting because a lot of the vendors seem to be moving towards that sort of $800 to $1,100 price point, which is dominated by, you know, 1050s, 1050 Ti's, and 1080p screens. But this is crazy. Up to an i9-9850HK, 16 gigs DDR4 2400, a GTX 1050 Ti, 1 terabyte PCI Express SSD, Pantone validation on the screen, which I think makes this less of a gaming machine and more of a, you know, a production machine for people that are tired of carrying around desktops. 132% sRGB coverage, 100% Adobe RGB. I mean, the specs are pretty awesome. But what really fascinates me is if you look for the strangely colored, scroll back up a little bit if you're watching the video, there it is. The screen pad, a 5.5-inch full HD IPS display, writes Mr. Hellstrom, replacing a standard touchpad with support for up to 4 finger gestures. Which, of course, requires a configurable menu at the top of the screen pad. So if you're using, for example, a compatible Office product, Microsoft Office product, you will have ribbon commands, or you can control your YouTube or Spotify sessions. Or you can use it as a secondary monitor. Or use the Asus Sync app to display and control your smartphone. So $2,300, certainly bleeding edge of luxury, certainly bleeding edge. I think they may have now taken the crown from unusual things you can do with a giant trackpad on a portable device. I can only wait to see how Lenovo responds next year, but not inexpensive Wish they had a faster GPU option for the gamers out there, although if you get the 1080p version of this, a 1050 Ti is going to be fine. Nice portable video editing laptop or Photoshop laptop, especially with the specs they're quoting on the screen. But, you know, just what I need is my phone, not just sitting next to me, but linked with my trackpad. That shouldn't be distracting at all.
No, I think it's fine.
No. Yeah. What's going on with Case King and is it Der Adauer?
It's pronounced Der Bauer.
Der Bauer.
It's supposed
My
to be
lead speak is weak.
Yeah, no, I had to be educated by somebody younger than me as well. It's fine. This is an interesting... So it is a prototype for a all-in-one, like kind of self-contained phase shift cooler. So think of how we have gone from only having custom water cooling options to these, you know, all-in-one water coolers that are easier to install. They provide benefits of cooling and, you know, noise levels and stuff like that. This is going to try to do the same thing for phase shift cooling. It's a prototype stage now, so the pictures are a little bit rough. The new cooler is a pressurized and closed system, places a block over the processor, uses vertical tube to connect to the holding tank and condenser. It's cooled by the fin stack you see up there and two 90 millimeter fans. So I don't know what this is going to cost. I don't think anybody has really dove down into it. It's using a fluid in there that they will not name what it is. I'm trying to think of, it has a super low boiling point. So in the story, it writes, the system uses a 3M Novak-like fluid. Apparently there are some concerns about what you're allowed to ship, you know, through shipping services in the mail, like what fluids you can use. So that's obviously going to be something they have to deal with as well. But it's really interesting to see this as a prototype, and reducing the size of what used to be an entire, you know, if you wanted one of these in your case, it was like an entire, you know, 18 inch by 6 inch by 6 inch panel or section underneath your case, right? That's how you used to have to do these types of things. I'm really interested to see what this is going to turn out to be and what kind of temperatures we can get to. The Der Bauer guy is known for his overclocking. He does like teardowns of PCBs and, you know, gives a bunch of detail on that. So if he's going to put his name on it, I got to believe it's going to be pretty good. It's definitely unique and the first of its kind. Yeah. And Steve here from Gamers Nexus does a good video kind of explaining what it is. Plus, it's got RGBs on it. And as we all know, that's all that really matters.
Well, it used to be all that really matters. Now it's all about the OLEDs. And, you know, I hear people in the audience right now being like, eh. It's okay with phase shift cooling, but really, not until it has an OLED.
Correct. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, rather than have lights in a window, we should have an OLED on it. So, yeah, read that story and watch actually Steve's video on that. If you don't really know what phase shift cooling is or, you know, how this is going to, or if you do know what it is, like some of these pictures, they talked about the tubing that goes down from the phase shift device to the CPU plate would be reduced pretty dramatically back to something more like we're used to seeing with all-in-one air cooler or water coolers. The thing on the side that extends over your DIMM slots, that takes away two of your DIMM slots, is just there for prototyping, for applying pressure, those types of things. Or it's a neat little project that won't be cheap, I would wager.
I think it's a fair wager. I got to say, I'm really fascinated by Seasonic's new system cable management device. They literally, so the power supply goes to that thing you see on the left and right, the little box you're looking at on your screen. It's a backplane, the SCMD. All of your power plugs get distributed on the side of the backplane instead of coming out in a giant, difficult to manage bundle or collection of modular cable bundles off of the power supply unit. I think that's pretty cool. They say it's thin enough to fit behind your motherboard, which I think is even better, or, you know, in the space behind your case, behind your motherboard plates. I'm pretty stoked about that. And it looks really Sano. And as someone who struggles mightily with cable management side of cases, anything that promises to make my life less frustrating in that area is a big plus. Curious what it's going to cost. The Seasonic claims, writes Mr. Hellstrom, that introducing the SCMD into your power loop will only drop efficiency by 1% overall. So that's cool. Hmm. RGB logo. OLED would be better. It will blend with your RGB collection. No price, no dates. But Seasonic suggests that there will be three sizes so you can fit it into just about anything you might want to fit it into.
Ah, I see. Got it. So,
finally.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool accessory.
I'm sitting here nodding my head if you're listening to the audio.
It is going to be attached to these individual power supplies. I'd like to see something that is maybe compatible with more, but I don't know how you do that. The whole key of it is to get one cable out of the power supply to make that neater. I didn't think we would see any innovation on the power supply side at this Computex. And that's really, again, what makes this show really interesting is that it is component level stuff that that we all love to see that would never show its head at CES more than likely.
Right.
So
I will also say, not to take anything away from the awesome 1200 watt OLED equipped Asus power supply, I'm much more excited about Seasonic trying to make cable management easier than I am about OLED screens on power supplies.
Yeah, that seems
finally
fair.
Should you be looking for a new and exciting case, new Crystal Series 280X RGB Micro ATX case from Corsair. RGB and non-RGB flavors, sporting no fewer than three tempered glass panels. And that's actually really tempting. The fans get the big nod in the press release. Two LL120 RGB fans, 120 millimeter RGB fans, each featuring 16 RGB LEDs. The Corsair Lighting Node Pro digital RGB lighting controller, combining with powerful IQ software to light up your PC in a dazzling array of patterns and effects, with 32 individually controllable LEDs to light up your system and plentiful airflow to cool multi-core, multi-GPU systems. The Crystal 280X RGB is the clear choice, for your next compact micro ATX system. You can see they got the light up memory inside of there. They got some glowy action going on those GTXs. Actually, I kid because I love to, mock RGB fans, but it's a really nice looking case. And, something we were talking about, buying a new case on, Tech Thing last week. And one of the things we talked about was, these monochromatic cases that have really kind of become one of the big standards. And it's pretty good looking. And if you're looking for a way to display all of the things that glow inside your system and hide all of the things that don't, unfortunately, this will not show off your 1200 watt OLED equipped power supply because it's hidden in the back. Right. I'm also kind of curious. I'd see Sebastian run some numbers on what the temperatures look like for the powers. If you do stuff a bunch of drives and the power supply in that box on the back, looks like it has a pretty good amount of ventilation on it. But I just want to say I love the cooling numbers for the cases in the reviews, by the way. Another interesting option. Don't think there's pricing in. No, I take that back. $159.99 for the RGB version, $109.99 for the non-RGB version, and available now from Corsair's official store. Officially,
one of the things. So Ken has the progenitor to this, and he his biggest kind of headache with it was that the case was narrow in that the power connectors coming off the graphics cards, if the card was a little bit taller than normal standards, you couldn't actually do it because the power cable would kind of hit the window on that. This case, Sebastian has this, he's doing a review of it now, is widened to the point where that is no longer a problem. So from a builder standpoint, they're taking things and learning and improving. And again, RGB fans. So
we appreciate that. Do you think the bulk of the Computex news is pretty much out at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's Thursday here. The show's been going on since Monday. You know, I think we'll find some stuff that, you know, none of my team is over there, so we'll find what other people are finding in the kind of back hallways, the small booths that don't get all the major attention, the Asus's, Gigabytes, MSIs of the world. Right. You know, there's still some interesting stuff out there. Like, we saw Gigabyte is releasing, it's going to start selling memory modules, but they're going to sell 2 8-gig modules for 16 gigs total memory with 2 dummy sticks that don't have ICs on them. They don't have memory on them, but they have the LED illumination on them. So you can populate all 4 DIMM slots on this board with LED enabled modules without having to buy 4 sticks of RAM. Right. And at first I was like, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. But I guess I'm like, okay, if you've got 2 on this side and 2 on that side, or you've got spacing between them on either side, right, like if you're in the computer building for the aesthetics, it kind of makes sense. I don't know exactly what the pricing add-on is for that. You know, essentially you got to have some PCBs to fit into the slot and then the RGB stuff, but the IC is still the vast majority of that cost. So you should be pretty good. And you can put a very cheap PCB in there, but we'll see. But that's the kind of thing that, again, only comes out at Computex. That's where we get these enthusiast guys over there covering the, right, covering the news with their stories and videos and whatnot. It's always fun to watch.
It makes almost sound like you no longer consider yourself an enthusiast.
Oh, no, I absolutely do. I'm just the one who's sitting out over here watching. Right. Yeah. From the comfort of home.
You know, yeah, you're racking up the family points by not traveling.
Yeah.
Oh, my that's goodness. True. Oh, my. Yeah, it's interesting. I'll talk about it next week because I got handed one to take a look at. But Pearl, P-I-R-L, charger.com, the Pearl USB charger. We both of us are big fans of Anker's multi-port USB chargers. They plug into a wall. The crew at Pearl decided they wanted all of the performance. And so this can run 2.7 amps. Simultaneously, if you have enough power plugged into it, and they're like, you can use a USB wall wart, you can connect it to a lithium ion battery, you can connect it to a car battery, we don't care what you connect it to, but it will deliver 2.7 amps to all 4 channels simultaneously with some very burly, like I'm looking at a computer motherboard components on there. There you can see all 4 separate channels. And set up so that if something foobars and something you plug into it, it will not take out the other 3 channels. So it'll support a full 50 watts, like 13.5 watts across each channel. Builds really nice. They sort of sandwiched motherboard material in between 2 layers of aluminum on that. So I feel like I'm not going to try driving any nails on it, but it certainly feels significantly more physically robust than most of the devices I've used. And I got to say, I'm loving that there's an actual watt meter going on, so you can see the total watt consumption while you're doing it. Possibly because I'm now realizing that Computex is not about the Intel and AMD battle, but about OLED coolers. And I cannot swing an OLED cooler, but $50 for a really, 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 really nice USB charger is tempting. It's a Kickstarter project. Yeah. As many of you know, I have suffered the Kickstarter system recently with some high-profile crashes. The devices they handed to Shannon picked up one at Maker Faire. They dropped one by the office for me to play with. Came from their first production run, so it's done and it's working. Huh. So, you know, I thought, as somebody who travels, I have gotten into the whole, I'm going to carry one Anker charger instead of, you know, multiple USB chargers. This is a pretty nice device because I've been fascinated. I've been using an Aukey battery that runs a fairly high amount of amperage over the USB port. And I will say, my gear charges faster if it's getting more voltage. I'm slowly getting rid of my collection of 15,000 milliamp hour batteries and replacing them with stuff that delivers a higher output amperage. So yeah, look at all the stuff they're connecting to. So, you know, this is essentially, huh, Yeah, I was like, I was thinking like, this is tactical in the sense of, you know, Navy SEALs and Special Forces and Tomahawks and Mayhem and 1,000-year nylon and GORUCK bags. But you know, if you're looking for a full-on tactical USB power supply, go check out the Kickstarter, PIRLcharger.com. Nice folks, too.
Interesting.
Nice folks. I just want to give them a heads up. So I'm actually going to be investing in the Kickstarter because I'm ready for a Kickstarter win to balance out my recent Kickstarter fails.
Oh, I like that idea.
It's good. So do I, actually. It's a nice looking piece of hardware. It's well laid out. It looks clean and robust. It looks overbuilt for what it's designed to do. Oh my goodness. So many exciting things coming up in the wake of Computex. As a random question, do you think it's safe to buy a GPU at this point?
Safe as in no new releases?
I think the prices have settled down as far as they're going to go at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there may be a little bit room for them to go down still. We didn't even mention this, I guess. I should point this out, that there were no GeForce GPUs announced by NVIDIA. And Jensen, CEO at NVIDIA, said, when asked directly about it in a room full of media and analysts, said it will be a, quote, a long time before we see new GPUs.
There has to be so much pent-up demand at this point.
Yeah, and I don't know what to take from that. Honestly, a long time could mean 45 days to him, or it might mean 180 days. So it's really hard for me to know what to take from that, right? I'm sure his PR department wishes he didn't say it out loud. But again, it's one of those things where they're not getting pressured by AMD with Radeon to release new stuff. The only reason they need to release new stuff is just because, I don't know, they got these things, they're making it, they might as well. You know, they've got a process technology that they know and understand. They've got yields where they want it to be. They would love to just keep selling 1080s and 1070s for the rest of existence, I'm sure.
Right.
The rest of us on the outside would like to see some improvements and some changes in that regard. They will do it. It will happen this year, but I mean, in terms of safety of buying a graphics card now at the beginning of June, I would feel fairly comfortable that you'll have a 3-month window at least before anything else happens. Anything is possible. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it could be like I get an email from their PR says, "Ha, he was just kidding. Next week we're having you out for a media day." I don't think that will happen, but I would feel as comfortable. This is the best time to buy a GPU we've had in a long time because of pricing. Right. Alone. So, yeah.
I mean, you know, spot checking camel, you know, there's been, you know, it's still, for example, a GTX 1080, a Zotac GTX 1080, the Mini, right? Because I'm obsessed with the short cards because of the Mini ITX or the Mini ITX builds. You know, there was a blip where it dropped down to $499, which is the lowest it's ever been. It was, you know, at $499 for several days back in May 2017, or maybe early June 2017. But you're looking at $549, so it's within 10% of the lowest price it's ever been.
Right.
You know, something a little less obscure, like an Asus GeForce GTX, a 1080 and ROG. That's at $585 right now. It blipped down to $513 for several minutes back around Black Friday, but that's typically been selling for about $570, and I think it debuted somewhere in the neighborhood of $666 before it dropped down in March of 2017 and started flirting between $580 and $550. But not the lowest prices we've seen, but you know, in most cases, close to half of what their peaks were earlier this year. Availability is good. I'm just saying this because, you know, I've been having a lot of people like, can I buy now? Can I build that gaming system I've been wanting to build for months? I'm feeling good about that. And if you bought a card, you know, I'm sorry if you bought a card in the last few months, but if you've been waiting, it's time. So I know the Crystal Series 280X RGB review is en route. Any other things you can tease that are coming up on PC Per?
No, not that I want to bring up yet. I think we got some AverMedia capture cards we're going to look at. that are pretty interesting. 4K, 4K HDR, pass through. I don't know. We'll see what those turn out to be. We're using the lull of hardware releases to rebuild some testing platforms. So not as exciting in that regard, but we're getting.
But it's very exciting inside the confines of your office.
True.
Because once you rebuild things and rework your test methodologies, then you have to run like 50 things through them. And then you make sure everything stays in its relative. Sorry, I can remember switching to new benchmarks and it always being a fraught process. Or I may just be projecting traumas of my
fucking
youth on. Oh, my goodness. twit.tv/twitch. That's the place to find the RSS feeds, how to subscribe, the video, the audio. There is no VR at this point, but most of you don't have VR rigs, so we're not going to worry about that just yet. Is the home of This Week in Computer Hardware. Get all the older episodes. If you're new to Twitch, thank you for joining us, and please subscribe on your favorite podcatcher and catch up on the older episodes. I'm Patrick Norton. You can find me over at tekthing.com and avxl.com. We recorded a fresh episode of AVXL talking about a bunch of the new 2018 televisions and some of the new audio hardware from Sonos that dropped this week. And oddly enough, there is a Fire TV Cube, which is sort of a set-top Fire TV with lots of IR blasters inside of it. But this Ryan Shrout is available at pcper.com, which is one of the finest places I know of to find reviews of everything from CPUs to GPUs to cases to power supplies. There are not a lot of great power supply reviews out there. If you're looking at a power supply, you might be shocked to find that just because it says it on the box doesn't mean it actually delivers it. But it's just going to lay that out there. Head over to pcper.com. Yep. Yourself some emotional trauma and get a power supply with a 10-year warranty. They're out there and they're awesome. So with that, thank you all for listening. You can catch up with us at Ryan Shrout or at Patrick Norton on the Twitters. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll catch you next week on Twitch.